My name is John Muller. I'm the village philosopher for this week, and my role tonight is to try and help just see that we can get this area discussed, which was announced as the question, is the U.S. responsible for the third world poverty and repression? Some of the concerns that led into this topic came because of a number of things that have happened here in the village in terms of presentations. I think you've seen or heard most of this. One was a presentation by Karen Schramm on Nicaragua, on her experiences there. She spent not a long time, I think she said something like 2 weeks, with a program that is a continuing ongoing program of groups going down to Nicaragua under Joel Muggy from Augsburg College in Minneapolis. And Karen shared with some of her perceptions and concerns about the fact that in some cases the information and data we were getting in the American press, for example, did not seem to jibe with what she was hearing there locally. Then we saw the last grave at Bumwazi. Am I saying that right, Charlie? Close enough, okay. Which I understand was shown this afternoon. And also the other day, Excuse Me America, which is a comment on South America. Two of these are focusing on South America, South American issues, and the third was on African issues. Well, in a sense, these have been troubled stories, bringing some things of concern because they talk about people with great pain. And traditionally, the Christian church has had a sense, following the gospel, is that we try and address the issues of the poor, the repressed, and the segments of society that did not seem to get much attention, particularly in the power of the world. And the purpose, as I see it, is that these might be addressed here, thought about in the Holden experience in the light of the basic theme for the village, and that is the politics of hope, which is an effort to address with some biblical sense something of what Jesus was about and is about, and at the same time trying to gain some sense and education about what lies ahead. The document, the year 2000, is an effort to try and project some of that. So tonight we're taking an hour to try and discuss our thoughts and feelings, because we haven't had that after the films. The films were shown, and unless you were able to talk about it with somebody that had some additional information or just a chance to clarify it, it didn't happen. So we're trying to provide that. We're also understanding that there are many perspectives, and what we are trying to do is give time to discover something about the richness of those perspectives. I was intrigued, Chuck, with your statement tonight in your presentation that when you were reporting on what was happening in the Middle East and what was the issue between the PLO, Israel, Jordan, etc., you made the statement that you thought that there was truth, but that there were many truths depending on your where you were coming from, whether you were Jordanian, Israeli, or Russian, or U.S., and that perspective was there. Well, now maybe that's what we're looking at, but I'm hoping that we will be able to get some discussion. I'm not concerned that we arrive tonight at some conclusion as a group. I don't think that's our purpose. Here it's really just to try and address things in a way that we can within the community. So that's my effort, just to set a background as to why we're here. Our style will be just simply for you to be able to raise or discuss questions or issues or things that you would like to do in this context, and we'll try and share that time. I will try and be a facilitator, simply seeing that everybody kind of gets a chance. As you hold your hand, I will try and acknowledge that I see it and try and remember the order. Okay, back here, please.
When I first saw the question on the board that said, is the United States responsible I wondered if the word responsible meant, did we cause it, or are we now responsible for what was caused? And I suppose both of them are able to be.
The assumption is that that might be possible. Do you have any feelings on that particular?
No, I'm here to listen and to hear what other people have to say. This is a whole new thing to me.
Okay, thank you. If I miss hands upstairs, somebody will help me see them. Because anybody who is between me and this smoke factory, I can't tell where you are, so I'll have to redirect.
Does that mean that one of the assumptions is that the problems that occurred in the fourth or third world countries was caused by the United States, and that now it's our responsibility to try to do something about it? And that's one of the reasons that it's our responsibility. Is this the question? I think that's what she was trying to get at.
Right.
But I'm not clear on that myself.
I think that's what we're here really to provide, because I don't think we were trying. The issue that the forum is about is to try and address concerns that everybody generally has. And it's an effort to try and word it so that it would address what kinds of things are around. And so the question is, how do you feel? I mean, I don't think we're coming with a load to say that we caused it. I guess I would have to say that we are in a one-world situation, that there's nothing that almost we do in the United States or happens in Israel, or look at Sadat when he was killed in Egypt, how this thing ricochets all around the world today, because we are small. In that sense, we're a part of it. I don't think the effort is to say that these things would not have happened if the United States did not exist. I don't think I could understand that. I don't know anybody else.
So that wasn't one of the assumptions, that the U.S. Was responsible for the poverty and misery in the third and fourth world.
That's correct. Right. It's not an assumption. That doesn't mean that we weren't. I think we're not, in my experience, what I hear from people, and again, I don't know, but I hear things that would suggest
I don't see anybody could possibly infer that.
That the United States has any
that
input.
They're responsible for it.
Okay, I'm thinking the issue is any responsibility. Are you thinking that we have no responsibility?
No, I'm saying that part of the things may have been caused by U.S. Efforts in that part of the world as far as business concerns and exploiting the country. But to say that that the reason that their conditions exist is because of this exploitation by the United States, I don't think would ever sell them anymore.
Okay.
I saw a hand here, there, and then there, please.
I had a couple observations. One was that a film like that is a little bit of a slice of something.
Which one, Jerry?
Which film? Last Great
Kimbasa.
Thank you.
That we might buy Volkswagen because it's made by good German workers and it's in fact made by black workers in South Africa. Or we might buy a Datsun because its Japanese technological quality is better. It's made by black workers in South Africa. That's an illusion, but that's just an observation. The other thing I sense myself, in myself, and in this group, surely, must be somewhere in there, the racist issue that the white minority versus the black majority in South Africa. And that's an issue that we have bumped our noses up against often. The housing there reminded me, as I saw the film, of the government housing on the Rosebud Reservation that I drove through to get here. The white people did something similar in this country to the native people who were here. That's an emotional thing for me. I can feel my heart pounding. And we have this idea of us as good guys and how we're going to help and rush in and do something and so forth. And in fact, when you start looking, what's going on here, I mean, is there something about white people? I don't know. That's an issue.
Okay. Thank you. Young gentleman back there.
Yeah.
I think one of the clarifications we are trying to make in the cause and effect trail that we're trying to go in concerning whether the United States is responsible is that the United States as a whole, I mean, there's no official policy that says we are on the road to exploit third world countries and we endorse oppression there and racism or whatever else. The United States has no official policy for that, but that certain entities in the United States practice things that result in those effects somewhere down the road that lots of people don't have any intention of having come to pass in the beginning, but that somewhere along the line these things manifest themselves, and then we look to see, to find whether or not we have responsibility for that. And one of the things we need to remember is that lots of times there's a kind of underlying pool of assumptions and practices that bring these things forth rather than a conscious type of action.
Okay. I heard that he was saying that somebody was asking this, and see if I'm hearing you correctly, that what you're saying is that maybe things we do as a nation, and perhaps as maybe some either policy-wise or as business interests, either in shipping or buying, some of the things that happen may not have been intentional. Nobody sat down and planned to do certain things. But because of certain assumptions on which those things happen, they did in fact happen. Okay? I don't know whether that answers it. Young lady here. No? I thought I'd seen your hand. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Over here.
I was just wondering, is our past dealings really the true issue here, or is it our dealings for the future that's the issue? Do we let our quote guilt feelings for what has happened, maybe due to some things we've done, be the issue? Or should our issue be, what do we do now? Where do we go from now? Are we morally, as a nation, responsible for these people? Can we, as a nation with the deficit we have, with the government bureaucracy we have, do anything for them without just wasting half of the money, you know?
And so you've got two concerns. One is, what can we do? Are we just trying to dwell on the past? But you're saying, is there anything we can do given our government style? Is that what you're saying?
No, should we dwell on it? Why don't we take it where it is now, see what we've done, you know, try not to repeat it and go on? Why should we dwell on it? And
so it's the present and the future that you feel that we ought to address. That's the way to come on.
I heard
Two
things being said there, maybe for purposes of clarification. One is, do we have an obligation because of something we stand for, because of whatever, regardless of cause and effect and guilt and blame, all the rest? And the second, do we have the power to do anything about it?
Mm-hmm.
Not power, capability. Doing anything about it. Is our system competent for whatever reasons to deal with the kinds of issues that we see in those, all of those movies or all those presentations?
Mm-hmm. But that, would you agree to that? Okay.
Over there.
Okay, over there and then over here.
Is it the American public or the American government, or is it the American big business that is exploiting the countries? In other words, Mobil Oil moves down there because they can get people to work for 50 cents an hour as compared to doing it in this country for $10 an hour. Same thing with the Germans, the Volkswagen plant. Why was it moved there? The German workers want, it's not the German government, it's the German business. same thing with the United States. It's not the United States government, it's not us as a people, but it's a business that, and the people from that country feel that the business is the American people.
Okay. Then here, please.
I think, as a country, I think we have a couple of problems in any dealings like this with another country. Over the years, I think that we have tried to want to be liked, and we've gone into countries on this basis that, our image, I guess you could call it. The other thing is that in trying to carry that forward and to deal with other countries, historically it seems that we put money, but we put it in the wrong place. We send vast contributions or government funds, and they end up making a few that are already in power much more wealthy. They don't end up being handed down to the people that need the help. This gentleman talked about exploitation. We exploit in our own country. If you look at industries that move into the Southeast, they have generally done that because the labor market was less well paid, and they could show a better profit sheet, and that's what business is all about, showing a profit.
And also, it seems to me the assumption is that the business does that, that's exploiting the people, whereas in all cases, that's not really the truth. You know, these people, that even though they work for 50 cents an hour instead of $10 an hour, they at least have a job that they're working, and they're better off economically than they were before the company was there. Isn't that true in many cases?
I don't know. Here?
One specific example of how that worked is when Dole Pineapple went into the Philippines, displaced some 3,000 tenant farmers, hired about 30 at much increased wages, and then the other 2,900 and some had to go to Manila. So that probably is, that's one specific kind of example, but that tends to be a pattern, that they are displacing.
So it may be better for some who have the jobs, and not better for others.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I think that very seldom trickles down to the small people where the poverty is. If any of you have read the book, Bread for the World by Paul Simon, he points out many, many cases in which not only our industry exploits the people, but our government policies in our trade policies. And when our industry goes over there, they also form policy just because of the power they have. And they, if we do buy their raw materials, we don't pay the price we should for them, and then we ask them to buy our products and charge them exorbitant prices in return. So we're exploiting their resources besides their labor. And there are many ways that book points out how we do exploit them.
Yes, here and then here. Oh, you're pointing upstairs. Okay, back there in the corner.
I'm sure that there are instances of that sort of thing where our manufacturers buy commodities or buy raw materials at low prices and sell back. I'm wondering if they're going over there and pointing a gun at them and telling them that they have to buy the products back, number one. Number two, I think the whole situation with the Mideast oil refutes that is an across-the-board kind of thing, because the oil prices went sky high. We paid them. And they sold dirt cheap to us for a long time. They set their price, and I'm sure there's a lot of going back and forth with that. But on the other hand, if we weren't buying from them, they wouldn't be getting the money, and some of the people in those Mideast countries have become extremely wealthy because of our trade. And if the United States shut itself off, shut all its trade off, and we just lived as an island in the world, there'd be a lot of countries a lot poorer than they are right now.
Okay, over here, one and then there. Skip you for a bit. All right, here, please.
On the issue of the Middle East and the oil countries, I know of very few oil countries that have poverty situations. Most of the countries that have oil wealth charge exorbitant prices, but the money stays in the country. A lot of it goes to major oil companies, but a lot of it stays in the country.
Well, a lot of that money is buying property right here in the United States, owned by those people too.
That's right. It buys property all over the world.
Right.
And then another one, someone else mentioned, is it business or government or people that's exploiting the people? And I think that it's a combination of business, big business, and government, because the U.S. embassies and consulates and so on do a lot of dealings with the business, and they will support American business and so on there. And then there's another aspect that every third world country wants industry, and so they will make initial agreements with big companies, not realizing that they are really being taken because they're so anxious to be developed and so anxious to have industry.
Okay. Let's see, David.
I wanted to address the Mideast or the oil countries. I think a lot of the wealth does stay in the country, but it's not evenly distributed at all. And I think that that makes it a very complicated issue of who we do trade with and how we do trade with them. Excuse Me, America, I don't know how many people here have seen that, but that's one of the movies that's been in question. Has some very good statements on what's been going on in Brazil, and the third world nations the governments have wanted to be to expand their industry, but the wealth has not been evenly distributed at all, and so it makes a very very difficult decision for a country such as ours, where we do a lot of exporting and importing. What is responsible? In South Africa, I don't think there's anybody here that agrees with the apartheid policies over there, but where do we draw the line? It's very difficult when we're getting almost all of our titanium and zirconium from South Africa, and all that is going into aerospace, almost all of it. I guess that My question is, where do we draw the line? It's not that there can't be lines drawn, but where do we do it?
Yes, here. What were you wanting?
I'm a little confused, maybe. It seems to me that there really are a lot of things involved that are not surfacing here. I hear on one hand something that sounds almost colonial in the room, something that says we ought to reach into those countries as a nation and reach down beyond their governments to their people and, you know, establish some sorts of principles in foreign sovereign nations try to enforce them, that are in contradiction with the practices of the governments, but not deal with the governments. That's a fairly arrogant point of view, it seems to me, and one we would not like very well if it were coming from the other direction. I think also we need to remember that one of the problems we have in dealing with this is that the economy of the United States is really substantially different. The economy, the government system is a lot different. Almost all the developing countries have the government, as someone pointed out, in the act very deliberately of trying to develop industry, trying to attract U.S. technology, trying to upgrade, and we're sympathetic toward that. I would question whether there'd be very many people in the room who would think we ought to be opposed to the upgrading of those economies. But on the other hand, we don't deal with them, with those governments, as a government entirely. We deal with them as, because of the nature of our economy, as individual corporations and individual entrepreneurs. So it's a lot more difficult to get at the issue of what is happening in South Africa than it might appear to be on the surface. What can we enforce, given the nature of our system, on either their governments or our businesses that do business through those governments in those countries? Very difficult, it seems to me. And that's why it comes down to the issue, the distinction, I think, that was made here, the difference between, are we responsible? Do we have, in the name of God, do we have to take some responsibility for trying to do something about those things? It has to be a different kind of question from what is it possible to us to do? What are we competent to do?
The last thing is that there need to be two questions, you're saying. One is, what should we do, and what is possible to do? Or what do we want to do? What was the first one?
What is our obligation?
What is our obligation? A moral obligation.
Yeah, that's been raised several times.
And then the second question is, what is possible? The realities of it. Okay? Yes, there? Thank you. I'm sorry.
I'd like to pick up on that, because it seems to me that there's a lot of, I call simplistic solutions and simplistic analyses on global problems. The simple devil theory, find something wrong, look for a scapegoat, put a blame it on and pin it on, and it's rather simplistic. For all the idea of goodwill, good intentions have good results. And I think as Christians we know that's wrong. Our theology tells us we're a mixture of good and evil. Even good intention may have a bad consequence. Sloppy agape, just leading our time. The world is a tough old world, and we have to really look at, and what really is going to help. They talk about the underdeveloped third world countries. Many of them are overdeveloped. They've been overdeveloped for 2,000 years, overpopulated, one thing other, depleted resources. And all we're doing is adding to it. Like the question, is your labor intensive or capital intensive? You've got to look very carefully. But we don't have full power control. We're not omnipotent. And we ask now, what are we going to do? How can we use resources to help be brothers to 4 billion people on the planet? And that's not going to happen just by people just emoting. You have to look realistically, I think, and really come to grips. Now, what are the resources and means how we might enter in and plant seeds that sprout and grow? At least I'd like to think we could focus on that kind of thing rather than blame. Seeing that film this afternoon, I don't know if it was film, but it reminds me of what the United States was like in the 1890s, you know, down deep south, even 40, 50 years ago.
South Africa, 1890s.
Yeah.
It was in the early 70s, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so, about 70s.
The other piece of the global 2000s, you know, really, if you look at that summary, that little summary that we have of that big report, really says that if we don't somehow do something significant and helpful, and I think the report keeps pointing out how long range that has to be, that we are the ones who are going to pay the price down the road. We will have a kind of environment that breeds revolution. We'll have kind of an intolerable world community, so that you know, when you look at that, you do have to move in some direction, just in self-defense, if nothing else. And I'd like to think it was more than that.
Okay, there, and I'm there. Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to build on that, Dwayne. I think we sometimes, one of our simplistic approaches as the church is sometimes to suggest that our U.S. foreign policy ought to be guided by the ethics of the Sermon on the Mount or something. I just don't think it's not likely, A. And secondly, I don't know if it's wise, because I think any political body will always have to act in what is perceived to be the self-interest of that body politic. And I don't think that's bad. So I think, and Global 2000 says it's in the self-interest of this country to help resolve world poverty. because if we don't, we're all going to sink together. The whole world economy is tied up in the poverty of the third world. It's in our self-interest to do certain things. I would argue that it's in our self-interest as a country to help find solutions in the Middle East. Even apart from questions of justice and peace in the Middle East, it's in the U.S. self-interest to do that. It's in the U.S. self-interest, I think, also, to find a peaceful way of relating to the Latin American people. In our long-term self-interest. We tend to define our self-interest in narrow and short-term dimensions because that's the way politicians are. But somebody has to be looking at a broader view than I think the politicians do, broader than the next election. But still the self-interest of this country. And I think the church can be part of that definition of self-interest.
I think it's really interesting that you point that out. And at the same time, it's important for us to remember in this context that the Global 2000 report is a government report.
It was a government commission that put it together.
And it is looking...
So was the Presidential Commission on Hunger report, which said many of the same things.
Exactly. So it is possible within a political system, within a political environment, to have a long-range focus. I think one of the things, one of the cheat shots we ought to take, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody else, is to look at the political environment that I deal with every day and that I love dearly as one that is somehow incapable of doing significant things, just powerless to look beyond the next year. I mean, all you have to do is look at the space program to know that that's not true.
There's been many beautiful reports, but how often do those reports get implemented?
A lot of them are gathering dust away.
That's right.
Ed has a point,
Mr. I'd just like to disagree with the two fellows that suggest that the United States should not try to influence the government of South Africa or because of its imperialistic colonial nature of such an attitude. We do it in every other government in the world. We certainly influence Chile, El Salvador. We certainly put pressure on Soviet satellites and the Soviet Union. And we use every ounce of power, both political and economic, to try to influence other governments. And it seems to me the apartheid policies of South Africa are cruel and barbaric, and that we should have a policy which should allow that government, through our political and economic influence, that we do not approve of that. We have similar policies towards the Soviet Union and the communist system. We say we do not like that as a system of government, and we will both use political and economic leverage against the Soviet system, because we do not agree with that in principle. But likewise, in principle, we as Christians do not agree with apartheid, and therefore we should be using our political and economic policies to try to influence that. Now, that's not colonialism, that's a real world. And it just seems to me that we selectively are only, it seems to me one of our political preoccupations is that of the evil of communism. There are other government evils in this world, and that we should be putting pressures in those directions.
Yes, back there.
I thought the interesting point of that was selective. We do a lot of things selectively because they're in our best interests. When you take the subject of the governments in these cases, we apply pressure on the Soviet government and satellites because they do not have, at this point, a resource that we need. We don't put pressure on South Africa, as one of the gentlemen over here mentioned, because of chromium and other metals that are in short supply and available from those countries. So we temper our philosophical, religious, and other beliefs with the almighty buck.
It's interesting that that is tempered, though, depending on the administration. We're always in need of uranium. I would agree with that. But it really does vary from administration to administration.
It certainly does. We just had an administration which had one kind of a moral imperative, something called, human rights, international human rights. Now we have another one which has another kind of moral imperative, which is basically anti-communist. And as a major, Russia is again the black beast in our external environment as a nation, as I look at what's happening. And it does change. So the question is, it's leaving, can we have amoral consensus? Can we have a moral consensus as a nation and arrive at it by some method other than the sort of apparently inept way that we've been doing that over the last however many generations? And then, Ken, do we have some capability to carry it out if we do it?
You're raising a question. Can we have anything? And if we do, then can it become practical? Yes, back there.
I think that we're going to have, you know, especially like in South Africa, the only way, one of the best ways of doing it would be through economic sanctions, to have the almighty American big business pull out of the country and then tell them if you want us back, you get rid of your system, and they would invite us back in, and they would get rid of the system that they have. Politically, you can't do it. It's because we change politics every 4 years or every 8 years, or we flip-flop all over the place. You got to look at the almighty buck.
The more important reason, I think, that we can't do that, or haven't been able to do it, that's the kind of system we have, which does not control corporations, does not control, we do not have government control of business operations.
That's not quite true, though.
No, we have some, I'm talking about the kind that says no American corporation is going to be allowed to do business in South Africa. That
we've had laws like that, Duane, with regard to the Eastern Bloc, however, and with regard to Cuba.
Well, we've tried them.
I'm wondering about the how do you respond, just for my clarification, on the ruling on Soviet Russia and the pipeline to put through to Europe, in which we're told that certain technologies may not be sold.
Well, we have been able to do that on certain technologies that are. That are controllable within our own system. But even now, there's a huge challenge on the question of whether an American company that operates in a foreign country, whether that can be enforced against them.
By American law.
By American law. But, I mean, it is a huge, huge kind of question, and we shouldn't ignore that.
There's no body of international law in place to govern such questions. There's really no body of international law, international economic.
Well, I think that's right, and I mean, I really question. I might be more in favor of having that than most of the people in this room.
Yes, sir.
I don't mean to change the subject, but I hear two basic assumptions, I think, being brought to the question, and that's what does this issue mean for us in the light of our faith, us being holding, trying to consider this question. And the two assumptions I see are that does our being Christian have implications or direction for our being American or Americanism? Or does our being American have implications or, I'm sorry, the two things I see being said are, does our being Christian have implications for our being American, or does our being American have implications or direction for our being Christian? Does anybody else hear that being said? I don't know. Is this sinking?
I don't hear another thing, which I really expected to hear a great deal about when I came here tonight, and that is, influence on our government is not the only way in which the people of America have capability to exert pressure on practices in other countries. After all, we have all kinds of evidence over the years of the ability to mount pressures on individual business entities in this country. Multinational corporations that are based in this country. I think there isn't any question that some of the practices of some American corporations in South Africa are affected by the, what would we call that?
corporate responsibility.
But I was thinking about the corporate responsibility committee.
Shareholder activity.
And specifically the shareholder activity on South Africa. And the church, I know, has been involved in that. I rather expected to hear that become something of a cause here. I'm surprised that I don't.
All right, let's hold that issue. There's, you had a hand back there, and then I'd like to go back to that.
Right. I came to listen and find out more about this, and I agree with this gentleman. I was expecting to hear more, what can we as a Christian unity, a body, and I'm not talking about just Lutherans, I'm talking about Christians all over, what can we do through our faith? And I hear all this intellectual stuff, and I don't understand all that, but I do know as a Christian that we can change the world through prayer, through reaching our neighbor. I know this makes a lot of us uncomfortable because that means witnessing, kind of. And that's scary. That's scary to a lot of us, too. And I don't mean witnessing in the term of grabbing somebody by the neck, but just by the way that we live our lives and reflect the way that Christ would have us live, first in our families, and then reach out in that way. And that's really simplistic. Some people were saying, well, we're trying to find simplistic, you know, ways. But I haven't heard anything like that yet.
I'm wondering, I just want to clarify, are you saying reach out to our neighbor by, for example, helping them understand what's going on and letting them see films or discussions like this? Is that the way, would that be carrying Christ to them?
I think what I'm trying to say is that we look for solutions through government, through economy, through our power as a nation, instead of looking in and finding the power that we have within ourselves to change our lives if they're not already reflecting the love of Christ in the way that He would reach out and handle things. And then with that inward reflection, then letting that be our guide to reaching out to other people. And it sounds really simple, but it bothers me that hasn't come up already.
Well, I'm hearing the question that you're raising with the one that Duane is putting to us, and that is the discussion that's going on in the churches as to whether or not we take that conviction in Christ and let it vote the monies that are in our pension funds, for example, and other funds that the church holds. Is that what you're talking about?
Whatever.
Did you hear that the, I'm sure you did because you saw it, but the film of the, is his name Heller? The little pastor?
Tom Heller, Tom Rock.
Right. That man was just a reflection of love. I was so moved by him, and he kept saying it has to start from within. Mm-hmm. He mentioned that several times. And I guess that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing everybody point outward. What I'm hearing is everybody point outward instead of us pointing inward. And that's simple, but.
Okay. Yes, Fran.
Just wanted to mention that I wanted to affirm the question this gentleman put, the double sword that he raised a few minutes ago. I happen to be serving on the church council during the months of. Seemed like this year's, we may all see that the South Africa question was being dealt with, and I must say that I feel that finally that was really what we had to struggle with. Does the system determine the place that the church will stand on a social justice issue, or do we say Jesus is Lord, and say that there are times when there are things that as Christians, positions we must take, and there is really a clear stand that we have to take as a Christian. I believe the way you put the question is very important. And no matter how complex, for instance, the issues around Germany in the Second World War were, and what all of the complexities were, there finally was a point where a position of status confessionis had to be taken by the church. That kind of a point can be reached.
All right, now just for the clarification, that's a technical phrase, that statue. Can you put that into English?
Mm-hmm.
The statue confessionis.
That one cannot say, I am a Christian and take any position other than, in that instance, it was in relation to the Third Reich, as I understand it. That one could not be both a Christian and cooperate with Nazi Germany.
So it became a matter of faith.
Right.
A denial of the faith, just as it is a denial of the faith to accept apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
That's a denial of faith itself.
Okay, so faith demands it, is what she's saying. Over here.
Yeah, I think that the system we live in is pretty much based on greed, and especially this American system that we have. And the other thing that I would ask, if that's true, how are we as Christians different from that system? You know, when people look at us, do they see something different, or do they see kind of an embodiment of that system? And then the third thing I would say would be that I think that every time we put a dollar down on a counter somewhere, we're making a vote for a product or for an idea, or we're making our vote for that system one way or the other. And it seems to me that we've kind of bought into the American dream and the American system, which is, I think, a pretty, well, it's a pretty greedy system.
I disagree.
I'd call the church to
I'm terribly sorry. I disagree that we're a greedy nation. A Canadian correspondent wrote an article that expresses it for me, and he says, we are the most giving, the most generous nation that's ever been put on this earth.
I had some friends from Nigeria, and I asked them, when you think of America, and especially America and Africa, what do you think of? And their response almost every time was, America will always go where its money lies.
Seems even that's what we were saying over here, something about the business interest. That it's self-interest, which you're saying, that's another term. You're using a pejorative term. Greed sounds like to us as a Christian, you know, it's a horrible thing, but it's the same thing as self-interest, really, I think. And that the issue is that that's what drives the American system, is that self-interest. But it also drives other interests, too, as I think about it. I mean, I don't think there's any country that operates without self-interest. Yes, Aaron, and then over here.
That was my question. Is there any nation on the face of the earth right now that is not operating on the basis of their own personal self-interest? Government leaders, right on down. Secondly, I take a look at this nation that we have inherited from our forefathers, who gave up almost every man that signed the Constitution. Pledged his all to support that, and they almost all gave up everything that they had materially before they died. Okay? Secondly, you will find no other nation on earth that has the great middle class, that is the participation in the material things, the equality that we have in this country. It is just a phenomenal system. We have a lot of problems, and there are certainly some liabilities in it. But it really distresses me when I hear people talk against our system, because I am so impressed with the freedoms we have.
Okay, up here, Sam.
I think what the films have spoken to me is that I feel that it's a tragic, in terms of a human commentary, that the oppressed have to always speak for themselves. And there was an Africana pastor here in the village, and he said that the blacks in South Africa realize that nothing is going to change until they make the changes happen themselves. And I just think of in our country, nothing would have changed for the blacks if Martin Luther King hadn't screamed it and made it impossible for us not to see that there was oppression happening. And whether it be the migrant workers or women or the Palestinians, or wherever we see oppression, I think it's tragic that it has to be the oppressed that do the speaking. And when we as Christians hold up mercy and justice as our ethic, and we cannot get into the skin of the oppressed, I think that is our sin.
Thank you.
When you and I were talking, John and I were talking today on hike, and we're both trying to stay away from getting down that hike. And I made a comment to him that really came, I think, from a Frenchman several years ago, that of all the revolutions that have been held, the promises, we have done a better job in delivering on the promises of the revolution in this nation than any other one. And I do believe that. However, the fact that was done, and the fact that we are powerful, and the fact that we are so technologically advanced, and all of those other things, does not guarantee our vision. It does not mean that we necessarily see right, or that we perceive as things are. And what I hear coming from these two films, and I would like to focus more on the Latin American one than the South African, what I hear coming out of those films is a different vision from what we are used to seeing. And I think it's that we need. That we need somehow to bring that into our way of perceiving the world. It's quite beside the point to say that America is a very giving nation. We, you know, that's important, but it is not the whole vision of how we are in this country or in this world as a nation. I think beyond that, to get away from the just get off the topic of being a nation and of operating politically with other nations. One of the remarkable things that's going, it seems to me, these days in terms of relationships with the third world is the church is one of the major institutions that has direct contact with every nation in the third world almost. We have the ability to hear from brothers and sisters in Christ who are already there. We don't just have to listen to official descriptions of what is going on there or what is going on here. We need to listen to those, but those are not the only sources for us. I think in terms of the Latin American situation, one of the groups that's tied into that situation more closely than any other one is the American Conference of Catholic Bishops. Latin America, justice in Latin America is one of the top items on their agenda. I think we need to listen to what they say about Latin America. Doesn't mean that it's the only thing we have to hear, but we do have to hear that. And we cannot cut ourselves off by saying we're still good guys and we're well-intentioned, or cut ourselves off by just listening to official speakers. We do have some contacts in these places, and I think we need to pay attention to those as well and think through what they say very carefully in terms of how we want to respond.
So what are they saying? What should we do, sir?
I beg your pardon?
So what are they saying and what should we do?
Well, you got a film to begin with, and increasing volumes of material coming out of Latin America, or an understanding of that situation from their perspective. I don't want to start giving a lecture on that. All I'm suggesting is we need to be listening to more voices than we've been willing to listen to this point. And a lot of those voices are brothers and sisters in Christ, and because that is the truth, we need to listen carefully to what they say, because they are living in the suffering that we're describing here, whether we're responsible for it or not.
We have time for one more. The bell gives us warning for those who want to get to the next thing, which is the film. Chuck, do you want to?
I just wanted to answer his question with one specific. With regard to Central America, the U.S. Catholic community is hearing and repeating what they are hearing from Christians in Latin America, most of whom are Catholic, which is that we in the United States, we need to stop seeing Latin America through East-West lenses as another place where the superpower battle in the world is being played out. That may be true. That may be part of the truth. But for the peasants in Guatemala and El Salvador and Nicaragua, that's not the primary reality. The U.S.-Soviet Union conflict. But we tend to see it in those terms, and our government tends to present it to us in those terms, and so we send in military aid for a military solution. And I suspect the Soviets are doing the same thing. But they're saying, I think, stop making us another place where the superpower battle is played out. Because that's not primarily what is in what our need is. So the Catholic bishops of the U.S. and the Lutheran leaders of the U.S. have joined them a year ago in saying that, have called on our government to not seek a military solution in El Salvador. But that is not the answer. That is, shipping more military aid in is not going to help. It's going to make it worse. But we're still doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, our time is at the point where we ought to make a break. Can I summarize?
I hope so. Okay.
I'm not going to summarize the content. I'm interested in process. Because I think the issue that the young lady raised back there is that what happens in the faith is the process. Now, that's what I mean by process. I would hope, I mean, this thing is so complex that it doesn't get lost in this week, because I think I sense that the subject here is of so great consequence to us, A, as we understand our faith and try and witness to our neighbor, both at home and abroad, and trying to get some sense for us. One of the things that I understand is that when things get too complex, we tend to become apathetic. And that the only way that faith says that we can really deal with that sin of apathy is to say that we're going to have to deal with the struggle to try and get some knowledge that will allow our faith to move. I hope you can use this week and with the people who are here to dig at that issue. Thank you. Enjoy the evening, and we'll look for you another time.